On this episode of Family History Run, could you not make it to Roots Tech this year? Yeah, us too. Don't worry though, Ron recorded his whole entire Roots Tech member presentation for you, and he is giving you all the deets and answering questions. So stay tuned if you want to hear his Roots Tech presentation. I promise you it's fun. And yes, he does do all of his animations too.
How does that look? That looks pretty crazy, doesn't it? Okay. So what I want to know, I don't know if I'm gonna tell, but maybe Larry, you can give me a ping on my phone and tell me whether or not you can see that slide okay. So that I can read my notes as we're going, and you probably see the notes on the bottom too, so that would be helpful as well. So give me a ping, Larry. Let me know if you can read it okay. I'll go through a couple slides so people can see what it looks like. All right. Won't get the animation, but that's okay. So we'll let everybody kind of join in again with our live. Hey, Cherie. Can you look at the Family History Round on your device and see if it looks okay?
I can see it on my phone.
Well, no, I thought you had you could, but I thought you had your iPad.
No,
I'm sure. Oh, okay. Yeah, I need somebody to look and see if it's okay, because Larry hasn't sent me anything here. You can come in and do it on your computer. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, go over there and look on the Facebook. Pull it up, see what it looks like.
You having troubles?
I don't know. I can't tell because I can't see it. Sorry, everyone. Just trying to get going here. Just search Facebook Family History Ron in this. Can you go to the live? What's that?
Roots Tech member presentation 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's not that one. There should be one right now that you can go look at. You sure you're on Facebook on Family History Ron?
Family History Ron.
Okay, he says the slides are up and working. So you've got to figure out where you got to look, Sri. I don't know where you look. Go look under events or something, or face or live or something like that. No, you have to look on my page. Come on, Larry, video. All right, Family Search Roadmap 2019. Here we go. Why do we do family history? Well, imagine from the beginning of time how many people were born and died without knowing about the gospel. About 200 years after Lehi left Jerusalem, Malachi the prophet closed his predictions with these words: "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the great and coming day, dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children." Well, you ought to have that full screen, Cherie. No place to make it full screen. And ye shall turn the heart of the father to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Moroni appeared to Joseph Smith 3 times in one night. Then again, does it look okay?
Yeah.
Then again the next day, and repeated the same each time. But if we look closer in Joseph's account, he elaborated on the Malachi scripture. He said this. He modified it. He said, "Behold, I will reveal unto you the priesthood by the hand of Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall plant in the hearts of the children the promises made to the fathers, and the hearts of the children shall turn to their fathers. If it were not so, the whole earth would be utterly wasted at his coming." By the way, I'll just point out the fathers and the children, the fathers that the promises were made to were Adam and Eve and Abraham and Abraham and Moses and all the prophets that asked the Lord for this, and he promised to them that it would, that this would happen in our day. And actually, this is repeated in every scripture that we have. The Bible, the Doctrine and Covenants, the Pearl of Great Price. The Book of Mormon actually didn't have it for a time. And if you go and look in 3 Nephi 24 to 25, Christ tells the Nephites that they missed it and to put it into the Book of Mormon. And that's chapter 24 and 25. So that's how it got put in every scripture that we have. It's such an important event and message. Okay. A week after the Kirtland Temple dedication, Joseph Smith and Oliver Cowdery were visited by Elijah the prophet, who gave Joseph the priesthood keys of the sealing of families. The prophet Joseph Smith preached at a funeral in August 15, 1840, that we could perform the saving ordinances for baptism for our family and friends that had died without the gospel. This is a list of the promised blessings of family history mentioned by members of the First Presidency and Quorum of the Twelve. The outline ones are the ones that I certainly want for my family, and I would hope that you'd want several of these for yours. Your testimony and conversion to the Savior will be deep and abiding. You will have power to turn the hearts of your family together and heal that which needs healing. And you will be protected against the intensifying influence of the adversary. I certainly want that for my children and grandchildren. So I am interested in having them do some kind of family history so that they can receive these blessings. Then in April 2017, President Irene said, speaking to the youth, "They have learned that this work saves not just the dead, it saves us all of us. The youth have caught the vision. Now their parents need to catch up. Many people are waiting for other ordinances that only the adults can perform. We are all gatherers. This is our task in this last dispensation. As we do family history, we'll discover our family, both living and dead." I have to run this one. Let me see if I can do that. Living and dead. Then we need to gather our family together and document them and preserve it, and then connect them together through saving ordinances. Nothing is greater. It's about families gathering their families on both sides of the veil and giving them an opportunity for salvation. Everyone has a family. No one should ever feel alone in this world, because everybody has a family, either on both sides of the veil or maybe just on the other side of the veil, but they're all in there. So let's start off. Let's talk about some notable features that we have done so far. We have the new Family Tree V8 client. Well, the reason we did the new V8 client was to improve performance, to reduce excess data download, to deal with small to large screens as a person moves from smaller devices to the full giant screens, and to update some features. So let's look a little bit at the performance of the new V8 client, which is the one we're using, and the previous one. So I'm going to bring that up here, and I'm going to give you a display. So here, I've started them both. They're using the high-speed internet and Lehigh. So the V8 client is now done, 4.9 seconds. The previous one, which is the one we had before the current one, notice it's still going. Ah, it finally finished 16 seconds later. This is one of the main reasons why we had to redo the client, was to reduce the data downloads and improve the performance. If you're in a high-speed internet, there's not a ton of difference between 5 seconds and 16, but if you're in another country, that's a significant difference. Some people had to wait, you know, that some of that times that 16 seconds is really a couple of minutes in other parts of the world. We have a new person page with several more tabs. When you click on a conclusion, you still see the values and the reason statement. We can now see how many people contributed, how many people are watching, 54 past contributors. And then we changed the show all, we changed the history, the word history, to show all changes. We made the change and we got, you know, everyone saying, where's the history? And we had to change it to see all changes because people didn't know what history meant. So we changed it to the other. And then people who looked for history couldn't see all changes. I had the same problem myself. Some are saying that the parents are below the children and spouses. They said the page was all messed up. Well, this can happen if your browser is too narrow. This is called responsive design, so it will work for small mobile devices as well as large screen devices. Let me give you an example here on this next slide. I'm going to go into play mode, and we'll play it. So I'm going to take a person page. This is the new V8 client. Notice the parents and children all look beautiful. Now I'm going to start squeezing the browser. I'm just making it smaller. Boop! All of a sudden, the parents and the siblings are gone. Ron, you broke it. It's broken and busted. I can't use it. Well, here's the smallest value, but you scroll down. It's all down below. It's all there. It's just thinned out and spread across the whole page. So now let's take the same page. This is the size of a browser on a mobile device. So now let's go the other direction. I'm going to close up the children so you can see how it works. And I start widening the browser. It kind of grows, gets a little larger, reaches a point where it says, okay, it's time to bring up some stuff. So now it's back up. So if you have situations where people are saying the parents are down below or the parents are somewhere else, it's broken, you just need to tell them to widen their browser just a little bit more, and then it'll be just fine. Okay. We have the timeline page. With events of the person on the left, it shows where they are on the map. And if you turn on the map, then you can select it and highlights the place in the map. Or if you select a place on the map, it highlights the event in the person page. By the way, I don't have in this slide because just a couple of days ago, we released histories, historical events in the timeline. So you can go to the show button there. You can select history events is what I think is what we call it, or historical events. And then it'll insert in there about four events, 8 events maximum into the timeline to kind of give you some cultural background of what's happening in their life around their birth, around the marriage, around children kind of time frame, and their when they died. Oh, I ought to point out that, and I'm going to skip this one. This was just to direct people to the class. We have the sources tab. So some people felt like the sources still remain on the details, but the problem with that, of course, is you're scrolling down and opening a source and trying to remember or write it down, scrolling it back up. Now you can just open a source you're interested in, scroll it to the top of this page, and then flip back and forth between the details and the sources to be able to match them up and see if it's aligning right. We had the collaborate page. We struggled with the title, collaborate, and people were upset about the notes being on the collaborate. But we analyzed the notes, and we found about 50% of the notes were notes that you would expect about a person, just additional information. And then the other 50% of the notes were people yelling at each other. Never, don't merge this with this person. Don't do this with this. Don't mess this up. Don't touch this person, that kind of stuff, to try to keep people away. And we figured that's kind of collaborate, so we'd stick it here and see how it goes. So we're continuing to monitor that. Of course, you have your memories and you have your ordinances tab as normal. All right, we updated the fan chart. So the fan chart now, you can have 7 generations in your fan chart. And then we also added some things that only members could originally see in the consultant planner. Now we make it available here on the fan chart for all. You can see birth countries. You can see sources, where your sources are, stories, photos, research helps, and ordinances. Okay. We have high-speed possible duplicates now in the system. We generally can discover a duplicate within 60 seconds after you edit the person on the tree. The possible duplicates now appear as data problems on the person page and in the tree views. Remember, your page will not update unless you refresh it. So if you made some changes and you refresh it, remember it takes about 60 seconds after you make your changes. And then after about a minute or so, you refresh the page. And then if there's duplicates, you'll see this data problem pop up for possible duplicates. We have homepage discovery now. We wanted to allow the opportunity for visitors who came to the site, or you, if you go to FamilySearch.org and don't log in, you can turn the keyboard over to a friend or another relative and have them use this experience to kind of get a little understanding of Family Search and see if it's something they're interested in. So you scroll down, you fill in information about an ancestor you may have had, deceased person, and then you click continue, and we'll tell you this was Henry Martin Tanner. Says, well, there's 103,000 of these Tanners in the family tree. This is the countries we found the most number of Tanners: United States, England, and Switzerland, the top three countries. We show you the count of historical records about Henry Martin Tanner that could be potential matches. And we show the top five persons in family tree that matched your entry. We show some photos from these Henry Martin Tanner entries. And then if you happen to click on one of these Henry Martin Tanners or Henry Martin Tanner, then it would ask you to create an account or sign in. If you do, it'll jump right to that person. We also do this on the mobile app, because sometimes you're with your mobile app, you maybe want to have a friend or associate. Try looking at what kind of their family might look like. So you can go into the Family Tree app. If you've logged out of the Family Tree app, you could click search for an ancestor, get the same experience. They fill it in. They get the top three countries. They get a list of the people that have been found, the top five people. Then they see all the historical documents and counts for that Henry Martin Tanner. In this one, we also show a little bit of the, I'll go back, show a little bit of the records, historical records. And then if you attempt to click on the Henry Martin Tanner or anywhere else, we ask you to sign in or create a free account. Well, then people say, that's great, but I don't want to log out of the mobile device because I always forget my password and can't log back in. So we said, okay, we'll go add it somewhere else as well. And so we go to the more and find a person, which has been in the mobile app since the beginning. You click that one, you enter in the information, and we'll give you an abbreviated version of this, how many Tanners, top three countries, and so forth. We now allow multiple images and stories. Remember, this was last year. So you create a story. You come in here, I'm going to pick a couple of pictures. I pick three pictures. Shows up like this in my story I'm creating. I fix my title and so forth and enter it in. Enter in my story. If I happen to click on the plus two more, it'll show me a sort of Rolodex of all of the pictures that are hooked to the story. And I can hit next to go to the previous or to the next, or I can hit previous, go to the previous one to go through that list. You can have up to 10 pictures per story. So if I want to change this, so here's another one of the pictures. This is me when I was a little kid. I can't remember how old I was. I was probably like, I don't know, 4 or 5 or something like that. Now let's say I want to edit the story because I don't want to add more pictures or change which picture shows up. I can go edit the story, and there's my list of pictures I have hooked to the story, 4 pictures. I can hit a plus sign if I want to add additional pictures. If I want, I can go and select a particular picture, and when I pick that picture, then that picture becomes the main picture on the story. So you can choose which picture is sort of the main picture of the story. And like I said, you have up to 10 pictures. We're working to help everybody discover more about their family. We're taking the deceased persons in family tree, and we're making them so that Google can search them. They'll be Googleable. We've started allowing several. We're working on a couple hundred million right now to just sort of test the water. into the ancestors into Google. We'll continue to grow that number as Google can crawl it. And here's an example. I went in and entered William Allen Tanner, 1905 to 1998. And he shows up there on the Google as the top spot. And then we click that one. Takes us to a abbreviated person page with his lifespan, birth and death, and some information about sources, how many sources he has, photos, and stories. Okay. You scroll down a little further, and you see the rest of the family, deceased members of that family. And, of course, you have to, if you want to go further, you click free account and log in or sign in or create an account to go further to go to the actual person page for William Allen to see it once you've signed in. All right. We also have, you can also go to ancestors.familysearch.org. And you can actually click on a browse surname directory. This is the root of our crawled Google stuff. And you can click on that browse directory and you'll see a list of all the alphabets and you can find a name in there and click on it to sort of browse around and look at people. We have sources on living. Okay. So now you can go in. I'm going to turn this on here for a second. Here's a picture of me. You scroll down and there's my sister's obituary. And I've attached it to myself. Okay, so we allow now sources to be attached to living people. We don't allow memory sources to be attached yet because I don't want anybody to go off and upload their birth certificates or their marriage licenses because I don't want those exposed up there until we get them where they can be private to a selected set. We're doing hinting on living. So a living record hints only when the living person page is opened. We don't hint beyond that because we don't want to put living into our systems that may be compromised, they're more easily accessed from externally, and we don't want to compromise that, so we don't find hints until you open the page. Just a second here. I'll take care of a little business for the dog. Hold on. Okay. So here's an example. This is I resurrected my mom and my dad for just a moment and made them both living so I can demonstrate this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to click on my dad, Cleon Tanner. In this example, he's a living person, and I'll say, go look at the person page. And within seconds of opening the person page, I'll see all these sources that are available for him. Click on one of those, and I can scroll down and see the whole list. I can scroll down there, the list of records. So there's 1930, 1940, censuses, marriage certificates. I can click review and attach. The source linker isn't quite working yet. They've got that on their list to do to finish up to allow it to attach to living people. But you can still attach it if you go look at the record and then click the little more button there and choose add to source box. This is the old school way. Boy, once we've had source linker, you really don't, it's not amazing to do it this way. So we got to get that source linker working. But you click add to source box, you can create a source. And then go to the person page. Here's my dad's person page. You say attach some source box. Find it in my source list. And then click attach. Put in a reason statement. And now I've attached it to my living father, if he were living. Okay. Updated portraits. So today, here's a portrait. If you go onto the person page and you can click on the portrait, it'll come up and then you can do edit portrait, you can do replace a portrait, or you can do remove a portrait. And we're going to do a replace portrait, so let's click replace portrait. When you click replace portrait, you see the list of memories that are attached to this person. You can upload or you can select from the gallery as well. I'm going to pick that first picture. So the way you do the portraits now is we'll put a sort of a shadowed picture circular thing where the circular spot is going to be the portrait, and then you kind of drag the picture around. So here I'm going to drag the picture to line up to William Allen Tanner. Are you done?
Yeah.
And then I'm going to use the little plus minus to zoom the picture up so I can get a nice facial shot there of him. And then the next thing that happens is the page gets a little spinner. It doesn't spin. It just looks like it does. But it's there for you, so you don't call me on the phone screaming, "Ron, where's my portrait? It's broken." Because this means that we are creating the portrait, and please have some patience. Within a minute or less or so, you'll be able to refresh the page, and then you'll see that portrait you just made. Okay. Now, there is only one portrait for each person page. There's no longer the concept of a preferred portrait. We actually went and did some research and found that 99.9 of the persons in the tree that have a portrait only have one. So we didn't feel it was necessary to use the resources and write extra software and keep and maintain for the few that had more than one portrait. And also, portraits are not automatically created from tags and memories now. That way you have a better control over making your portraits. All right. I hope you're hearing okay. We'll just keep on going. It appears to be showing up on Sheree's computer. Here we go on Family Archives. When we are done with an update, let's see, we also have now this new activities that we've researched about. We met with families and especially moms all over the world, all over the globe. Well, several places of the globe. Of course, we didn't go everywhere. They're trying to find out how best to engage youth, even young youth, 10 years old, 9 years old, those kind of ages, and get them interested in learning a little bit about their family and family history. We've created a family activity pages. Right now, there is a banner on the logged in homepage and the logged out homepage that will direct you to discovery. And in that discovery, there's in-home activities. And these in-home activities have make family history fun in 5 minutes. That's the goal, to be able to have some fun in 5 minutes. There's like these activities about me. So you learn about yourself. You learn about me, All About Me box, sort of a place to keep your precious pictures and so forth, where you came from, how you got your name, why your parents named you that name, and why that's important to have that meaning. We have another section about my family, so you can learn about trivia game about your family and how your parents met and family photos and family traditions. We can also, that walk where they walk, you go and try to go where your ancestors were, or do a virtual tour with Google Maps and Street View to sort of see where your relatives lived in another country, if that was so. And then, of course, the temple, to learn about preparing for the youth, preparing themselves to go do baptisms for the dead and other activities at the temple. Okay. We're moving right along. That's great. Planned future features. So here's the plans for the future features. But first, let's talk about the stats for 2018. Here you go. There are total, at the end of 2018, we had 1.21 billion persons in the tree. People are adding approximately 3.8 million new persons every month. There are 1.3 billion sources in the tree, and you're creating 25 million new sources every month, new additional sources every month. That's just tremendous. Thank you for all the work you're doing there to help the tree get more accurate. We do need to help people just learn more about sources and how to make them valid for the person they're hooking them to. There's 32 million memories total. There are 6.2 billion searchable names through all the different avenues of searching records. We have 1.25 billion historical record images. And we publish approximately 271 million new index records every year. So I say, if it's not there, just come back in a few weeks and maybe it will be. I wanted to let you know the single largest tree in Family Tree at the beginning, actually, I think this was at the beginning of February this year, was $464,786,908. But by the time we did Roots Tech at the end of February, it had grown by 4 million. So now at the end of February, it was 468,749,577 persons in the single largest tree in Family Tree. It's truly amazing to me, and a testimony builder, that I figured there would be different sites. There would be a big tree for Korea, maybe Japan, a big tree for Western United States, and maybe a little bit of England, another one for Australia. But in reality, it's a bunch of little tiny trees and one big giant one. It's just amazing how that is coming together. We are completing the work of updating parents and spouse relationships to add support for same-sex relationships. We are updating the GEDCOMX standard, which is the standard used to allow products to transmit and share genealogical data between each other. This standard allows us to transmit and share genealogical data and represent all types of parental and spousal relationships. Partners and Family Tree are still completing this work, so stay tuned throughout the year as we finalize this work with our work and the partners finish their work. But I do want to point out that it's important that we do this work because we want to represent accurately the families that exist today and in the future. I will point out, since this is a member presentation, that for those that are in same-sex relationships, when they die, they will qualify for baptism, confirmation, initiatory, and endowment. But there will be no sealing to parents, to same-sex parents, and no sealing between spouses of same-sex. So that's the current plan. We're working online you to be able to order memories in an album. So here's an example. I'm going to turn this on here so we can kind of see a little animation. You'll be able to go over and grab a memory inside an album and drag it over and drop it in a place, and it will rearrange and keep that thing, sort of like how we did with sources, where you can rearrange the sources by dragging and dropping. But this will only be in an album. I do recommend, though, that you work on your dates and places for your memories, because we will most likely be adding the capability to be able to sort by date, which I think is the most common thing people want to do. They either want to sort by the youngest photo to the oldest or most recent photo, from the oldest photo to the most recent photo, or the most recent to the oldest. And so if you work on that, getting those dates in there, then I think you'll be able to just click a button to have it resorted in the gallery as well. So we're still working on shared family groups. If you recall, we've talked about it a couple times. We're in our second round of prototyping to see how well it's working and how people are responding and the kind of activities they want to do. The second round prototyping is starting soon. And this is an example of some mock-ups. For example, people could post to a little messaging place where they can post a picture. This is a picture, for instance. They can post a comment. Can someone help me identify all the rest of these people? Maybe you, Grandpa. And you can even turn it into a to-do list so that people, your family that are at, have rights to participate in this family group, that they will see family to-do lists and things like that they can help, and then help the whole family in doing their genealogy work together. Get a little more coordination. I kind of felt like there would be somebody in the family that's sort of like the conductor, that sort of keeps things running and then assigns out tasks to people based on their skill levels and gives them opportunity to improve their skills and to learn new skills. You know, maybe when we start talking about reunions and things like that, who knows? And of course, the sharing of living so that everybody sees the same living, and people add pictures or stories or events in those living, everybody in the family group will be able to go see those additions and the memories and so forth that are attached. And shared family groups will come with a reservation list. So this is so that with every family group, you'll be able to share reservations from your list to the shared family group, And then they will be able to go, all the members in that group will be able to go there and print off cards from that list for them to go do. Be a great way to share, you know, your baptism confirmations to your kids or grandkids or whatever. They just go to the that other place to go get them and print them. We're still working on sharing living persons, notify of change to my contribution, more frequent watch notifications. I think we're currently in the process of working out daily. And then once we get that worked out, we'll begin the sort of 15-minute notification and much more, of course. Image search. We understand it's time-consuming to browse around images. We are working on a search for images using the data we saved with each collection to help narrow down the images you're needing to look through. So here's an example. I'll turn this on here. So let's say you go into search historical images. You put in Ohio, United States. You go down and select the counties that you want to narrow the search down to. You enter in a date that specifies what date ranges you would like to have. You specify the type of life events you're interested in, marriage, death, birth, things like that. And then you click update or go, and we will take you directly to the first image in that film that talks about those type of events, county marriages, within those day ranges in the particular country and county that you are looking for. And then you just have to look through those set of images that cover that county. We hope this will save lots of time so you don't have to scan through like 117 images to find the beginning. We'll jump you right to the beginning, and from there you can take a look at those images. We're working on historical record user corrections. We're going to start off with names to allow people to correct the indexes. Here's an example. Let's say, for example, you entered in Oliver. If you look over in the left top, it says Oliver W. Gentry, but it gave you the best match was an Alvin Wendell Gentry. And you look at it and say, that looks pretty close. Got the right mother and the father and the spouse is right and so forth. The dates are okay. Well, yeah, that looks interesting. I need to look at more. So you go and you open it up and you click and say, boy, this is really close. So let's go look at the image. So you'll be able to click on the image. And what you see there when you look at the image, you look at it and say, oh, yeah. Well, that's obviously Oliver, right? And not Alvin, although I can see how they might have gotten Alvin. It's really Oliver because I know him and everything else is right. So I want to fix this index to correct it. So I'll just go over here to where the name is, and I'll just type in the new name, fill in the other stuff, and hit save. And when I do, it comes back here, and you'll see now there's two entries, the initial index and the one that I just corrected it to. And when we do searching and so forth, we'll match either one of those and bring it back in the search results so that people can look at those records and verify. So we're starting out with name, and then we'll work our way through some of the other pieces of data. We've also provided several new discovery experiences. We're trying to take the experiences that we give in a family discovery center and make that available to everybody online so they have a discovery experience everywhere. You go to familysearch.org/discovery. There's also advertisements on the logged in and logged out homepages where you could just click it and go directly there. Here's some example. So here's when you're not logged in, you only get a couple of discovery experiences like Compare Face, All About Me, Picture My Heritage, and Record My Story. If you log in, you get a whole lot more because now we can start using your tree. So here you get all those plus the missionaries, pioneers, occupation, Relief Society, so forth, headstones. So let's take an example. Here's an example of Compare Face, pretty popular. You go and upload a photo. I pick a photo. It's analyzing my image, it's bringing it up. I accept the agreements about what I upload. And then it goes off and finds ancestors in my tree and shows them to me based on the highest percentage. So highest first, and then as I move to the right, it looks less like them. I can click learn more, for instance, and I see that particularly an abbreviated person page with the relationship from me to that individual. And I can click to see stories, photos, documents, or audios, or even add a picture if I have one of this person. Let's take another one and click occupations. And this one, what it does is looks at my ancestors that were in the 1880 census and tells me what their occupation was listed as. I think this is the first time they had occupation in there in the U.S. Census. So, and you can go down here and just pick, show me the ones that were farming, show me the ones that were stock raisers or blacksmiths, and you can learn that stuff there. Okay, the next thing, we're moving pretty good pace. I hope this isn't too fast for you, but I want to make sure we have time for some questions. That's always important. So we're going to go to 8:30. I'm going to be around for 8:30 so I can take some questions at the end. I know it'll be an hour and a half instead of the normal hour. But let's talk about temple and reservations. Let's first start by who can I submit to the temple? So a lot of people are concerned or frustrated or don't understand who they can and can't submit. I went through all of the documents and the policies, reviewed them with several people that are experts in the field, and then came up with four simple steps that you can know whether or not you're looking at a person that you have the proper rights to take to the temple. So one, there must be a valid, reasonable, common ancestor between you and the target person, preferably sourced. And by the way, Adam and Noah don't count as a common ancestor. Unless, of course, you have certified documentation of your relationship between you all the way back to Adam or Noah, which no one's going to have. So you need to have a reasonable thing. Now, for visualize this, visual learners, here's what we're talking about. There's you. You go up your direct line. The target person is the person who has temple ordinances available. You are good to, if you're a direct descendant, you've gone up the line and that person is there and needs ordinances, you're good to go. It also works if that person is a descendant of that common ancestor. So you take you and you walk up the chain, you take the target person, you walk up their chain, and if you hit the same ancestor, then you're good to go, okay? Because you have a common ancestor. And because you're allowed to do descendants. Now, you can do ordinances for the target person, his or her spouses and children, and descendants of this family. All right? So let me show visually what that looks like. If you go up, you go down, you can do the ordinances for that target person, their spouse, their kids, and their spouses, and their children of those children and spouses. So you can do all of those people, the ordinances for all of them, all the descendants. And, the next one is you cannot go up the target person's spouse's line and do that line or any descendants of that line. So this is how that looks. So if you go up and you go down, then you can't go back up the spouse's line and do those parents or any relatives up or down from that person, because there is not a common ancestor between the spouse's parents and you. If there isn't one, then you can't do those ordinances. You're not supposed to do them. However, I will tell you there's one exception. You can do the sealing to parents of the target spouse to that person's parents without doing the ordinances for the parents. And the reason why we want you to do that, because back over here, we want you to complete this family. We don't want that family to not be done just simply because there's a sealing to parent for the spouse that never gets completed. So we want you to complete all ordinances for that family, them, the target person, the spouse, and all their children. We want you to complete that. So we allow you, and it is acceptable and approved, to do the sealing to parent of that spouse to her parent, his or her parents without doing anything for the parents. If you recall, if you've been a user of Family Search for several years, you recall there used to be a sentence on the sealing to parent card that says, make sure all the ordinances are done for everybody before you do the sealing. And that that instruction on the card has been removed, and it's specifically for this case. Now, that doesn't give you free will to do this in all cases. If you have, if you're doing this common ancestor here, let me go back here. If you do that target person and their spouse, or let's say the one in between, if you have a reservation for the whole family, including the parents, then you're expected to do it all in proper order. Hope that wasn't too confusing. I'm sorry. I kind of was jumping around. Okay, now, the last point here is your spouse line, your adoptive line, or your foster lines are equivalent to your bloodline. Meaning, you can do your spouse's line, you can do your adoptive line, or you can use your foster lines are equivalent to your bloodline, meaning your biological line. And you can do any one of those, and you're perfectly fine to do those. Now, some people who know all the policies say, well, what about the little, I call it the loophole clause, which says, if there's a small village somewhere in a small geographical area in some remote location where almost everybody has the same last name and you can't prove your relationship to everybody in the town, you should be able to prove your relationship to one of them in the town, but if you can't prove it to all the persons in the town, then you can go ahead and do ordinances for all those with the same last name in that small geographical area. I call it the loophole because some people use that as a reason to say, I can do all Tanners in New York, which is a fallacy and not appropriate because that's not a small geographical area, nor a constrained sort of independent area. So do that wisely, please. Now, we're winding down, this is important things I think you need to know. So I'm going to ask you some questions. I'll do it this way. Have you shared any ancestors with the temple that seem to take forever to get done? I think all of us have. Have you found ancestors that you really want to take to the temple, but they have been reserved by someone else for years? That is so frustrating that you can't do those and you're willing and ready to do them. Have you searched up and down your line trying to find a name to take but can never find one? I certainly have that problem. I always say Tanners, they're animals, man. They're all over the tree. Well, and when you find that untapped line, green temples everywhere, you are so elated. What a great feeling. You get so excited. I found a name. And then your mind speeds up. And the world around you slows down. And you remember, if you're old enough like me, back in the 1970s when it was hard to get gas and you had to get a full tank and you cheated. You went to the first service station early in the morning, got your 5 gallons, and then you ran to the next service station saying, I didn't go to any of the other service stations, so you could end up getting another 5 gallons. Or if you don't think about that, you think about that Black Friday that was there. You want to get that special gift for your kids and grandkids. I think mine was Tickle Me Elmo or something. I went to every store in Utah, and I could not find this Tickle Me Elmo thing. So you go in, and you line up for that Black Friday. You say, I'm going to get it. And you tell yourself, it's going to be okay. Don't panic. There'll be enough out there. But as soon as the door opens, you panic. And you're racing around like a crazy person trying to get that Tickle Me Elmo. And then in your head, your mind instantly switches back. I remember my descendancy view the last time I looked at it. There wasn't a single green temple in sight. And then you panic. And you start clicking. And you start reserving. And you can't help it. It feels so good. You click, click, click. You go, whew, I got them. I got them all. They are so hard to find. You got to get them all, right? And you're elated and you're static and your reservation list is crammed full. Well, before long, you got a lot of reservations. So how many names, don't answer, of course, how many names do you have on your reservation list? But let's just take a minute and think about how many ordinances can someone complete? Let's just say you have 100. Doesn't seem like very much. Many have much more than 100. So let's just take, for an example, a representative reservation list. This is sort of representative of the ordinances that are out there in most reservation lists. 5 baptisms and confirmations, 10 initiatories, 15 sealing the spouses and sealing the parents, and 70 endowments. This tends to be about the ratio. And I've estimated how many trips it takes to the temple to be able to do these ordinances. So that's 74 trips to get to the temple to finish those 100 ordinances on your reservation list. Now, if you go, that's 74 temple trips. If you go once a week, if you go every week, it's going to take you 1 year and 5 months and 2 weeks to finish those ordinances. If you go every month, it's going to take you 6 years and 2 months to complete those ordinances. And this is including going to another temple when your temple's closed for cleaning for 2 weeks. So as you can see, there's 100 ordinances, is plenty of ordinances, a year's worth if you go in every week. Now, I know some people go daily or whatever, and you probably can consume more than 100 ordinances. So, but Elder Dale G. Renlund of the Quorum of 12 Apostles said at Discovery Day in February 2016, he said, "Find as many names to take to the temple as ordinances you perform in the temple, and teach others to do the same." He did not say, go and get a 6-year supply of ordinances, okay? Wouldn't it be great if we could do that with our food storage? Just a bunch of clicks, and all of a sudden we have 6-year supply of food. But we're not looking for 6-year supply of ordinances. So let's ask a few questions. What is the largest reservation list? When I ask this question, most people say stuff like 1,000, 500, 10,000. The largest reservation list is 400,000 ordinances. And actually, they reserved 650,000 and then shared 200,000. Or 150,000, something like that, 150,000 to the temple. So they have the 450,000 on their list. That's just crazy. So now let's just talk for a minute about how many ordinances are reserved in the entire system. So I can't show you, I shouldn't have really told you the first one about how many is the largest reservation list, but I think you need to help understand the magnitude of some of the issues we're dealing with. So how many ordinances are there reserved? Well, I can't tell you the details, but I can show you proportionally how many ordinances are reserved. So if this white box represents all of the members who are in Family Search that have one or more reservation in their reservation list, then the purple box represents all of the ordinances that they have not shared with the temple that are still on their reservation list. So that little box of people are holding captive all of those purple ordinances that you can't get to because it's on their reservation list and they have not shared it with the temple. Okay. Now, how many ordinances have been shared with the temple? So let's stick that on top of the other two squares. Now this is all proportional. So if blue, the whole blue square, represents all of the ordinances that have been shared to the temple, and then I overlay on top of the blue the purple ones that they kept on their reservation list. So you'd have to sum up all the blue and sum up all the purple to get the total amount that are sitting on a person's reservation list, either held or shared to the temple, then the number of people that have all of these ordinances locked up is represented by that square box in that set. So this is why you have frustration, because there's relatively few people that have all of the ordinances that have been available in the tree. Now, wouldn't it be great if we could all work together to figure out a way that when a person comes to Family Search, they can find a related name to take to the temple, a related ordinance. And I'm talking about when they come, and every time they come, every single time they come, they can feel that joy of finding an ancestor that is related to them that needs temple work that they can perform. This is certainly a way to help their hearts become closer to the family history. And then from there, we can take them further steps to teach them how to contribute and add to the tree in a good way. So how can we do this? How can we make it so whenever anybody comes, they have an opportunity to take a name to the temple that they're related to? Here's how. With ordinance ready, is the ability to request ordinances by type from related ancestors in your lines. So here's an example from the mobile. You go down to your temple, you go to the temple tab, and you'll see at the first screen in there an ordinance ready button. You click the ordinance ready, and you can select from a set, baptism, confirmation, or initiatory, or endowment, or sealing the parents, or sealing the spouse. And then we search the system to find ready ordinances that are already qualified and ready to go. We tell you where we found them. This, in my case, I found it off my reservation list. And then show you those people that are available. You can click view person, and I recommend doing so to learn a little bit more about that ancestor. You can click view relationship to see how you're related to that person. If you click continue, then that means, and that you can uncheck, see the check green check boxes on the side, you can uncheck those if you don't want to take that particular person. But you hit continue, we will automatically print the cards for you. So it could be a reprint if it's coming off your list. And then you can take those cards as a mobile device. It delivers the PDF to the mobile, and you can share it with your mobile printer, and it would print those cards on that printer. Now, let me tell you how Ordinances Ready works. It's already shipped. As you know, it shipped in November, I believe, is when we started it. What Ordinance Ready does is, first, it pulls from your reservation list. We do not want to give you more ordinances than what you have on your reservation list, okay? We want you to complete what you have on your reservation list. So first, it looks in your reservation list to see if you have those ordinances you're looking for. If we can't find all of the set that we're going to give you, I think right now we give like 4 baptism confirmations and initiatories, like 5 initiatories, 10 sealings, 10 or 15 sealings, and 1 endowment, of course. So if we can't find them, enough of them on your reservation list, we'll go to your share, what you've shared to the Global Temple list, and we'll pull them back from the Global Temple list and give them to you to take. If we can't find enough then we'll pull from a related name from the Global Temple list. So we'll go look at all of that purple, blue inventory of all that's been shared with the temple, find you a related name, and then take those ordinances and give them to you to do. If we can't find it then we'll walk up and down your lines trying to find a green temple icon that is ready and qualifies to take to the temple. And if we exhausted all of those 4, then we'll just take an ancestor from the Global Temple list and hand it to you. It will primarily be the oldest person that's in the shared temple list, so the oldest ones can start getting pulled faster. You may or may not be related to that ancestor. We only look up 15 generations or so. You may be related to that ancestor in generation 16 or something, or a descendant of that one. We ignore anyone that falls into the 110-year real rule persons, because we don't want to get involved in having to request those things. If you are a person that, and then we verify that it qualifies for the temple, meets all the criteria. We check for possible duplicates that the system can find. And then if you get ordinances from the Global Temple list, the line 5 or line 3 up there in Ordinance Ready, if they come from the Global Temple list, then you get an expiration day that is 90 days. If we give you one like from 4 that walks up down your lines, you'll reserve the whole thing and you get the 2-year expiration date when that gets automated. Okay, Ordinance is Ready is shipped, and it also exists on the website And under the Temple tab, you can click Ordinance Ready, get the same experience online. Now, Ordinance Ready, people ask me, said, well, I want to run Ordinance Ready for my, I'm a male. I want to run it for my daughter. I want to get ordinances ready for my daughter. And the answer is, sorry, we only give you give you persons that you personally can take to the temple. Ordinance Ready is designed as a personal experience, not a way to collect a bunch of ordinances that you can pass out to other people. So what we recommend there is you help your youth go and create an account of their own. And when they want to go to the temple, do some baptism confirmations, they can push Ordinance Ready, get those ordinances, and then take them to the temple. It has their name on a card, which is much more emotional and much more real to them when they have their name on it. So it's designed as a personal experience. We have no intentions to change that, to make it so you can choose the sex that you're interested for the ordinances. Here's an example, for instance, of expiration date of a 90, I think this is a 90-dayer. We've already had our first round or two of the 90-day expirations. What happens when it expires is it goes back on the reservation list. It goes back on the global list in the place where it was previously. It doesn't lose its place in line. It goes right back in the same place that it came out of. So there's no reason, since they got pulled for a little while, if they don't get done, they get back in the same place and don't lose their place in line. Now, there's some let's talk about changes we're going to make to the temple distribution of the global inventory. So today, the way temple works, and this is why you're frustrated when you share the temple, it seems to take forever. Some districts are shorter than other districts, and you're saying why. The reason is this. Ordinances are shared with the temple district. The shared within the temple district stay in that district. So if you're a member of the Mount Timpanogos district, then you share temple ordinances to the temple. They get put in the pot for Mount Timpanogos. If you're in South Jordan, it gets put in South Jordan's. If you happen to have a large district that has a lot of family history happening and they're all sharing to the temple, then the line is long. If you're in a temple district that has few that share with the temple, then the line is short. And so when it gets shared, the temple gets done quicker. So the only time it ever pulls out of a district is if another district needs that ordinance and doesn't have any in their local list. What are we changing? We're going to change it that the temple list is shared across the entire world. And always the oldest one in the list we've done first. The only exception to this is until we get all of our languages working, we'll still be sending Chinese names to Hong Kong and Korean names to Korea, things like that. But eventually we'll get those so we can transliterate them into Romanization or back and forth, Roman names into Korean name, into Korean phonetics and so forth. But that's the plan. We're also going to make changes on reservations. As part of this way to allow to everybody have a personalized experience in taking an ancestor. In the future, we'll only reserve a limited number of reservations. You will be limited in the number of reservations that you can have on your reservation list. You will be able to share unlimited ordinances with the temple, and those ones you've shared with the temple will not count against your limit. So let's say the limit's like 500. You reserve 500. You want to reserve some more, 700 or whatever. You're going to have to take 200 of those you reserved and share them with the temple. And then you'll be able to reserve 200 more. Get the picture? Reservations will start automatically releasing on the 2-year anniversary. Expiration will show up on the reservation list. There is some leeway in this particular number 3, and that is if you complete an ordinance, as we've said in the past, if you complete an ordinance within that 2-year period, then we'll give you an extension to be able to finish out the ordinances you have. You'll be able to share with others by ordinance. Today, when you share with family and friends, it takes the whole reservation. We're going to fix that so that it shares like sharing with the temple. You'll be able to have on your list a reservation. You'll be able to share the baptism confirmation to your children or a child, and it'll still stay on your list, but you'll see that the two have been shared. They'll only see the baptism confirmation on their list when they accept it. And then you can turn around and say, well, I'm going to unshare, so you take it back off their list, for instance, if they don't get it done in the time you want. You'll be able to share with these share family groups that we talked about earlier by ordinance. In the future, you'll be able to reserve ordinances that are shared with the temple right out of the tree. So you'll be able to wander the tree. If you find somebody, some relative that has been shared with the temple, you'll be able to look at that in the tree and say, I want to take it. So you'll be able to click reserve it. You'll be able to put it on your reservation list. And since it's taken from the shared temple pool, then you'll have 90 days to get that ordinance done. If it's expired, of course, it goes back in the same place. We're also going to introduce ward and stake temple lists, how these are going to work. You're not going to say share with the ward or share with the temple or share with the stake. What you're going to do is share with the temple. And then when the stake wants to do some sort of stake temple day, and please take a card from somebody in the stake, and you need to get a card, then you can go into your reservation list and say, I want to take something for the ward or the stake, and you'll see all of the ordinances that members of your ward or members of your stake have shared with the temple, and you'll be able to pick one off to put on your list, or pick several off to do it, put on your list and go do. Okay, so join us at familysearch.org to try to document and preserve the most accurate genealogy of the world, preserve it forever. Family Tree is the world's genealogy. Share it, discuss it, fix it, source it, preserve it, get help from millions to save billions in places like these. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to stop this Facebook Live, because I have to stop it in order to go to camera. So I'm going to stop this and just stay on. I'm going to start a new Facebook Live. I'm sorry. I wonder if I can say stop.
That's going to do it for us today. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Family History Ron. So what can you do to support us and helping us with our goal of sharing family history with the world? Well, let me give you a few things you can do right now. First, you could head to Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this podcast and give us a 5-star review. By boosting our reviews, it puts us to the top of the list, which lets our podcast be seen by a whole new group of people, which means more people, more listeners, and the more people we get to educate. Second, you could leave a review on the podcast and let us know what you love about it. It always helps us know what to create more of for you. Third, you could share the podcast with those you know who love genealogy and history as much as we do. Those three things are super simple. You could do them in 5 minutes even, and it would help us boost and share our knowledge with those around us. Lastly, if you want to catch Ron live, because he's always way more fun when he's doing hand actions and drawing you crazy pictures on his whiteboard, then head over to Facebook, search Family History Ron, and follow or like the page. We go live twice a month. It's always on a Thursday, and they start at 7:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. We can't wait to see you there.